Everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Jeremy Blair.
And I'm Ryan Wayland. So, buddy, you usually have new things that you'd like to tell everyone, like of what you've seen since the last time. Now, I finally have something. Even though I kind of already talked to you about it, and you said you didn't really care.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll just zone out. Then you just tell everyone else.
Ashley and I saw a Haunted Mansion, which honestly, it was good. Like, I didn't think it was bad at all. I mean, as I was texting you about, compared to the Eddie Murphy version from 2003, the bar was already pretty low. So all Disney had to do is just be better than that. And
Haley is sitting over here, and she made a face at you. Because she likes that one. So
apparently, okay.
This is. But listen, look. I'm also learning new information. I did not know she had ever seen the Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion, but now apparently it's her favorite movie. So I don't know.
But see, like, here's the thing, though. Having Ashley and I having been on the ride itself,
sure.
The Eddie Murphy one is just way too on the nose with everything. Mm-hmm. About the ride, as where this one was a little bit more subtle, and it had an actual really good story to it. Plus, I mean, fucking Lakeith Stanfield, bro, like he's the best. He's so good in everything.
Yeah, that's true. I do like Lakeith Stanfield a whole bunch. Danny DeVito's amazing also. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but the cast was a knockout. Now, I will say, I have a lot of questions on specifically around one actor. And that's Jared Leto as the Hatbox Ghost.
Oh, Jared Leto's in this movie?
Yeah, he's the villain.
Okay.
Spoilers for everyone if you didn't already
Jesus
know that.
Christ. It's only been out a week, Rain.
But like the thing I have a question about is like how did they shoot him? Like was because his character is one of the most iconic ghosts on the ride, which unfortunately is on the Disneyland ride in California, which we haven't been on.
Which
Disney World doesn't have. Disney World doesn't have. Well, didn't you say you went when you were a kid?
Like I was 13. That is correct.
Well, then it wasn't there when you were there.
Oh,
they just reinstalled him like 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, I've been on the ride. Who was a part of it? I can't say, but I was there and I saw the holograms. It was very cool.
Well, the Hatbox Ghost is one of the most iconic because his head disappears and ends up in his hatbox.
Interesting.
So Jared Leto plays that character. So just, I was curious as if they made him fully CGI or if Jared Leto was on set and then they just mo-capped his face.
I don't know. Probably to keep everyone safe, they probably just CGI'd him in. You know? Just to keep everyone at arm's length, you know? It's like, guys, don't get too close.
Yeah, he's going to send you a dead rat in the mail.
Yeah, he'll
especially because
orb all over you.
I was reading an interview with the director, Justin Simien, and he said, you know, I only got to spend, you know, a little bit of time with Jared, but like when I did, he was full Hatbox Ghost. And I'm like, really? He went full method for a kid's movie.
I think method acting is embarrassing, and I don't care who what people say. I think that's embarrassing. If you're a method actor, that's embarrassing, and you should be embarrassed.
Well, but our boy Cillian Murphy is a method actor.
Don't care.
You know, they exclusively referred to him as Mr. Oppenheimer on set.
Embarrassing.
But here's the thing. Here's where I think method acting should improve is like, okay, when you're in the scene and you're fully in the scene, great. But as soon as the director yells cut or you're done for the day, drop the facade. Like you're not that person anymore. You know, I mean, shit, fucking Heath Ledger drove himself crazy because he was the Joker 24/7.
I mean, I think that's an oversimplification. I think he was going through other stuff at the time. I understand. But I mean, you're right. When people take it too far, Jared Leto is a wonderful example of that. Just, you know, it is funny that he did it for Haunted Mansion, dude. That's pretty funny.
Well, and then of course they pitch shifted his voice. So his voice is much lower to match kind of, I guess, the Hatbox's ghost voice on the ride. But all in all, to say with all of our twists and turns there, the movie was good. I enjoyed it. Ashley loved it because she loved the Haunted Mansion ride while we were at Disney World. Like, we even went in our Haunted Mansion paraphernalia
that we bought.
Yeah. Like, I have a shirt, like a button-up shirt that has the little bat stanchion. And then Ashley has a long sleeve shirt. She said she didn't care if she melted in the theater, that she was going to wear it. But yeah, it was great, you know.
Okay.
Ashley, you're going to be very offended by this. I asked Ashley, of the three movies we've seen in July, Oppenheimer, Barbie, and now Haunted Mansion, what order would she stack them in? Haunted Mansion, Barbie, Oppenheimer.
Unbelievable.
Now, she said it had nothing to do with, because she didn't like Oppenheimer. Just of the three movies, she would definitely go rewatch again and again. Haunted Mansion's at the top of the list.
Wow.
I was like, well, you know what? That's fine.
Sure. It's fine. The first time I ever went to a movie theater double feature was, we saw The Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy.
Uh-huh.
And then mom saw that they were showing Timeline, and she goes, I love that book. Right. Let's go see Timeline. And so then we went to go see Timeline.
You know, Ashton and I really tried to plan to go see Barbie then Oppenheimer, but it just, there was too much overlap in the showtime. So yeah. Anyway, anything new that you've seen recently, buddy, or no?
Besides the movie we're talking about today? Yeah. No, on Friday, obviously I watched the movie for the show. And then, Haley was working. She had some like spreadsheet stuff to do for work. And so she was working, and I put in John Wick 4, and we just rewatched John Wick 4.
Nice.
It was pretty awesome.
Hell, I drank
five beers.
Five brewski beers?
Yeah, five brewski beers in my Mojo Dojo Casa house. And we watched John Wick 4, and it was awesome.
You know, mom, when she went to Comic-Con, she got to sit in on the panel where they talked about the Continental show that's coming. Mm-hmm. And she said it was awesome. And I was like, cool. And like, I didn't think that it wasn't not going to be awesome. So,
I mean, it's going to be a Peacock. That's not awesome. So
it's streaming on the cock. Ugh. That's a line that Sebastian Stan says in Pete Davidson's show, Bupkis.
I really want to see like a Poker Face. I really want to see, you know, with Natasha Leon, but it's on Peacock and I don't have it. And when I did have it and paid for the subscription, I still got ads. Fuck you, Peacock. Fuck you, NBC. I hate you. So.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. You know, they gotta keep churning out to their sponsors, you know? Yep.
Not if I pay.
Well,
that was bad.
Well, buddy, would you like me to get this ball rolling for my final pick before the end of season series?
Yeah.
All right. So, everyone, this is my final pick of our, I was going to say Tim Burton-a-thon, which it's a Tim Burton-a-thon for me, but our one director-a-thon season. This is Tim Burton's, at least his second biopic we've done for this season, 2014's Big Eyes. So this was a first watch for the both of us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wanted to see it, but just nothing. I didn't have, like, none of the timing, like, like added up. So I just never had time to go see it. What's your excuse?
I frankly just wasn't interested. I saw the trailer. I go, well, that's the movie. And then I, you know, I don't know. I love Amy Adams. I love Christoph Waltz. And when we watched it on Friday, I was like, oh, Danny Houston. I love Danny Houston. And then I was like, oh, Kristen Ritter. Awesome. Yeah. You know? But yeah, I just never. Now, there were things while I was watching it that I was gearing up for. And I was like, okay, this will be interesting. I'm wondering what they're going to do with this information. Because I have no prior knowledge of this, right? Of the story of this woman, right, of these paintings. I may have never even seen one before of her paintings. You know, I don't remember ever seeing one before.
I don't think I've ever seen one of her paintings either, right, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Which is kind of disappointing. Because my mom, I remember growing up, used to have a lot of books, you know, coffee table books of art, you know, prints of art, artwork and stuff like that. So I don't think I've ever seen any either. Yeah.
But here's that synopsis so I can tell you my disappointing thing.
Okay. All right. So Big Eyes follows the story of Margaret. I don't remember her former name, Margaret Keane, who is a painter who specifically paints portraits of children with really big eyes. She just feels like the eyes see everything, and this is just how she captures the world. While trying to make a living for herself and her daughter, she meets Walter Keane, who becomes her future husband. And he really has a lot of charisma and is very charming and convinces her, well, you should keep painting. Like, this is like, you and I are going to have a gallery together, all that good stuff. And then people start to notice her paintings, but because he's such a good salesman, he's taking credit, which, like you said last week, is Scarlet Street. But unlike Scarlet Street, this is definitely a one-way agreement. As where in Scarlet Street, I've already purchased his name George, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
We're going to say it's George. He was all for it. He was like, yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. As were Margaret, when Walter proposes this idea to her, Margaret is very hesitant and very apprehensive because this is something that she's worked hard on for years. And so things start to snowball and they're making a lot of money and they get a gallery. All the while, Walter is just taking credit for all of these paintings. And he's even asking Margaret, like, well, I'm going to go on TV and I'm going to talk about our artwork. What should I say? Why does this inspire me? And finally, it all comes to a head when Margaret realizes that Walter doesn't know how to paint, doesn't know anything about painting, and has just been lying this whole time. Which it all culminates in an awesome lawsuit. And from what I read, it's pretty accurate to how the suit actually went down. And Margaret is vindicated and Walter doesn't get to see another penny. And that's Big Eyes. Go ahead and tell me what you're disappointed in.
Okay. So I guess this is an indictment of Tim Burton's blocking, because okay, I was 100% sure that Margaret's daughter wasn't there. Okay.
Okay.
Because of the visual language of these shots that she's in, right? So when you know, her daughter's always behind her, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, always kind of just off to the side. And it's normally when they're by themselves. Obviously, I was, you know, once Walter says hi to her, talks to her, I was like, oh.
So what you're saying is it's the Janie thing with Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Because, well, okay. So here's why I thought, again, especially I was all in when she went to that job interview. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the way everything was just so – she was just so, like, standing up straight, very prim and proper, you know, very, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, in the back seat – telling her mom good luck, and then you know, and it's like, you're not gonna just leave her in the car, right? So I'm like, maybe she's not there, you know, so that's kind of interesting, right? Maybe she's painting these paintings of her daughter because she misses her daughter and all that stuff, and I thought that was going to be the story, and it wasn't. But they continued to do that throughout the whole movie, is they continually blocked her that way, or treated her as if she were a figment of her imagination in just the way she interacts with everybody else. Even when she's talking to people, I was for sure that Margaret is just making it up in her mind. You know?
Yeah. I was going to try to offer some sort of answer, but honestly, I don't know.
Also think so? Am I stupid?
No.
Well, those two things aren't really mutually exclusive, but
No, I didn't really think that. I was just kind of like, oh, okay, that's cool, I guess. Because, I mean, honestly, Jane doesn't really add anything to the plot mm-hmm. until she gets older. So I was just kind of like, okay, that's an odd choice, you know, but.
Yeah.
I didn't think she was like. Not there.
You know. Well, I don't know. I guess I'm just so used to that trope that I'm just like, I just saw, you know, these people being positioned very oddly in a shot, and I go, she's not there. But, well, you know, I don't know. I will start out by saying, besides that this movie is not very Tim Burton to me. The only thing that's Tim Burton are the paintings, which of course he's gravitated to those paintings. They're, you know, they're like out of his imagination.
I could see that. Yeah. I could, you know, cause the whole time I was watching, I was like, oh, you know, this doesn't feel, you know, very Tim Burton. The two things that did were one. Yeah. The paintings themselves, but two, also his use of color, kind of like, Edward Scissorhands, everything's very bright.
Well, I was going to say, when she's leaving her house in the beginning of the movie, that's very Edward Scissorhands, that neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. That she's leaving. And then the vibrant colors as she's moving to San Francisco. When she's driving to San Francisco, everything is very bright and very vibrant and very painterly, right? Which makes sense. But it reminded me of Mrs. Lovett's By the Sea, and everything was vibrant and, mm-hmm. you know, very over the top in color and things like that. So that I liked. That was very Tim Burton on the opposite spectrum of what we would stereotypically think of him as, right?
Yeah, I would say comparatively to the other biopic that we've done this season, Ed Wood, mm-hmm. you know, I think with Ed Wood, Tim saw sort of a kindred spirit with mm-hmm. Ed Wood. So that's why Ed Wood felt very normal in terms of Tim Burton's style and his tone.
Yeah.
But I think maybe with what, you know, he was probably trying to tell Margaret's story properly, especially. I should also point out, I meant to point this out way at the beginning of the season. Tim is definitely just he's a director. He's not a writer and a director, because he has not had a hand in any of the scripts and any of the movies that we've done this season. But I definitely feel like with this one, he was just wanting to tell Margaret's story and leave a lot of the Tim Burton isms kind of at the wayside and really focus on Margaret's story, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, and you know, I mean, that kind of fits in with the pattern that we've been going in, right? Because like last week, this didn't feel like a Fritz Lang, right? So this doesn't feel like a Tim Burton, right? But in a way, I guess it's sort of interesting because it's like their growth as directors are able to tell a story in a way it needs to be told, not in a way that fits their own personal style. Right.
Right. Well, because so we already kind of covered.
Go ahead.
No, and I was going to, you finish, buddy. So you don't finish. So you don't lose that thought.
Well, I mean, to shoot this, like to shoot it like Scissorhands or Beetlejuice or Corpse Bride, I guess. like to have them be like very pale and gaunt and everything's dark and, you know, it wouldn't fit right. You know, it wouldn't make any sense because that's not who these people are. And especially since one of them moved to Hawaii, right? So that's definitely not going to work.
Yeah. I agree.
So it's just interesting. I don't know. Again, I think he was gravitated by the artwork itself, right?
That yeah. When you Google this film, no, I'm sorry. It was when I was Googling more about Walter because I wanted to understand Walter a little bit more. A picture of Tim sitting in between Margaret's paintings pops up. It's the funniest thing. So, buddy, since we've kind of gone through the preliminary stuff, where do you want to begin with this movie?
Well, I mean, the character of Margaret is very interesting because she's not your stereotypical 50s woman, right? She's she's independent, right? Or at least she stands up for her and her daughter, right? Like with her deadbeat husband the first time, leaves him. That's very unusual for the time. And then, of course, eventually standing up to Walter, finally having enough of it, right? That's really interesting. And she is extremely talented. And not only talented, but able to produce a massive amount of work, right? I should have looked up how many paintings she did because it was a lot.
Well, here, keep talking. Got you, buddy.
So I guess those would be my first impressions of Margaret. But again, I spent the first few beats of the movie thinking that her daughter was dead. So I don't know.
I can't find an exact amount.
That's okay. Well, I was just curious because in the movie it seemed like she was able to like produce
just
massive amount of paintings like on command. Which is crazy.
I couldn't find anything that said how many she made, but yeah. I do find it interesting that she was able to just, crank it out. Now, granted, it's a movie. They were probably playing with time and, you know, and doing some minor time jumps here and there. But I would agree. It definitely seemed like she was just like on a roll.
I mean, just cranking them out.
I mean, even with the quote unquote masterpiece, you know, she had like half of that already done.
Yeah.
Like ahead of schedule, I think is what they were implying. Wow. So Yeah. But yeah, you know, Margaret, you know, I love how Amy Adams played her.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Amy Adams is fantastic in anything she does.
That's true.
And oddly enough, a little cameo from the real Margaret. Margaret is the old woman on the bench in one of the scenes, which I loved. I was like, ah, that's great.
Yeah.
Which Margaret actually did just recently pass away last year.
Oh, she was
94 years old.
Wow.
And guess when Walter died?
When?
In 2000.
Not very well, but he was older, wasn't he?
Yep. Yeah, but she outlived his ass.
Is he from Austria? Is that why Christoph Waltz played him? I didn't even look that up.
I don't think so. Everything I read about Walter is that they just kept referring to him as American.
Oh.
He is from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, well, I mean, that makes sense because Christoph Waltz does an amazing Nebraska accent. So that makes sense.
I think Christoph probably got the role because he plays a good villain, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially with Walter being much more subtle and manipulative versus like Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
You know. I definitely think that's probably another reason why he got it. But we'll get to Walter. Anyway, so I love how Amy plays Margaret. It also makes me wonder if Margaret was really like that, like in real life, you know, someone who was very, you know, cause she falls for Walter pretty quickly. Like, I think she'd only been separated from her husband for like, what, a month or two?
It seemed that way, but I bet you it wasn't that fast, but.
It was probably
the movie makes it seem it was very, very fast. But you know, like, I guess we can start transitioning to Walter because the movie does this amazing job by tricking me. And I'm wondering how true this was, if those, you know, those street view paintings, if he really did just paint his name over those. Or if that was just some like way, or if that was a reveal in the film to show that he really doesn't know how to paint, right? And that was the only way to show that. I don't know. Again, I should have done more research, but I've been very busy at work. I apologize.
Everything I seem to find about it is I don't think he did that. But I think it's a way for the film to show he doesn't know anything about art.
Yeah.
Truly. Yeah, because everything I read, it just mainly focused on everything with Margaret. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. But again, good job. Because like if for the film, good job. Because, you know, it's a good way of representing that he doesn't know how to paint. Right. And again, tricking me into thinking that I saw him paint, which I didn't, I guess.
Well, you know, and you know, when we get that reveal with Walter that he doesn't know how to really do anything, it's like a, it kind of reminded me a lot of Glass Onion a little bit, where Edward Norton's character uses suggestion and people think like, oh yeah, he did do it. But I love that the movie already kind of gives us a clue. Like when we have that cameo with the real Margaret and Jane goes, hey, your canvas is blank.
Yeah.
And you know, and Margaret's halfway through her painting already. And all his excuses like, oh, well you can't rush inspiration, you know?
Right.
Which I mean, maybe I'm reaching, but I feel like that was the film giving the audience a little bit of look.
Of course. No. Clue. It absolutely was. No, that's what that is. It's foreshadowing that reveal that he does not know how to paint. Right.
Right.
and in that he's just biding his time so he can like pretend or whatever. But that does bring me to the courtroom scene where, and by the way, I was going to jokingly tell Haley, I go, you know, the only thing they're going to have to do is like paint in the courtroom, but that's silly. They're not going to do that. Because that doesn't seem like a real courtroom procedure, but here we are.
Well, and like I said, everything I read, they yeah, did and that was actually legit. Do yes, that.
They did.
Yeah.
If I were him, I would have tried, you know?
I know. Yeah. Just tried something like, you know, you've seen her paint, like you could potentially try, but
well, now I also thought that wouldn't it be funny if after all these years, he actually did figure it out and then could reproduce like her paintings.
I don't know. Well, and that his whole, like, my arm hurts, I can't paint today is true too. Like he, I don't know if he said it was like an inflammation, but he was just like, oh, I can't paint, my arm can't do hurts. It today. Yeah.
That's so bizarre because again, like try at least, you know, like if yeah. you don't do anything, you lose immediately. If you try, we'll see, you know?
Yeah. Especially considering, you know, at the little blurb at the end of the movie, he was still so adamant that he was the real artist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like my guy, like you proved yourself that you're not, like you kind of screwed yourself over there.
Definitely.
So I do find it very interesting that Walter as a character is, I don't want to say delusional, but he is so wrapped up in his own greed that he starts to believe his own lies, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, you know, reaches a peak of narcissism when he's, you know, when he's in this, when he's doing this scheme, so much so that, you know, he's very, you know, blunt and arrogant and all that to, like, you know, reporters and people who are interviewing him. And like when they were at their house, right? And that's when his daughter shows up and you're like, what the fuck? You have a daughter? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause all we've gotten by that point is that he had a previous marriage. That was it.
Yeah. But, you know, that's, again, that's more foreshadowing that he's hiding more stuff, right? That, you know, we have the blank canvas. We have this daughter that he never talks about or has never mentioned. And so he's hiding all of this stuff. And then again, good reveal of him not painting those street view paintings.
Yeah, it's really good. And then, like, I thought for sure that maybe he was going to get away with it. The whole like, oh, that was my, what did he say? His like, not alter ego. I don't know why I can only think of alter ego, but like his pen name. Oh, it's like
a pseudonym. Yeah, pen name.
Pseudonym. Yeah, pseudonym. There we go. Yeah. And then like, and I thought for sure, I was like, okay, maybe he is like, he is, but then Margaret hits him with the, well, then why did you paint over it? And also, why would you use water-based paint on oil paint? It's like, ooh. Definitely got him. But yeah, it's such a great reveal, especially when he knows he's beaten. You know, he's trying so hard to make her believe, like, no, I went to the Louvre. I, you know, studied at this school. And she's like, just be honest with me. And then he breaks down and it's like, well, okay, yeah, I've never been good at painting. And it's just so, it's kind of triumphant, honestly. And we're still like, we still have like 45 minutes left in the movie and we get that reveal. So,
right, yeah.
So good.
Well, because, I mean, we already didn't like him, right? He's already like not being nice to Margaret. He's, you know, taking all this credit, but he's, you know, being mean about it. And he's, you know, making her lie to her daughter, who is real apparently, and lying to all these people, and she's like having a really hard time with it, and you know, you really feel for it because, you know, it sucks to be so good at something and then not being able to tell people that you're good at it, or, you know, like when people were to ask her if she paints, she's, you know, supposed to say, oh, no, not really.
Yeah, and yeah, and then that goes so far as her to change up her style a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That way she can finally start getting credit for things that she's actually made.
Yeah.
Which is just insane to me. But as Danny Houston points out, that it is very, you know, of the times of why this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, can I just say, I love that Danny Houston is our narrator.
I do love Danny
Houston. For the Houston. Whole movie.
Yeah.
I thought for sure we weren't going to see him. Because, like, when his voice comes on, I was like, I know that voice. And I looked it up. I was like, okay. And then he fucking shows up later on. I was like, oh, I didn't think we were going to see you at all.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I thought he's for sure.
Newspaper reporter, I suppose.
Well, let's see. Well, he says that when he introduces himself to the audience, that he's a reporter. But I was like, ah, there's no way we're going to see him. We're just hearing his version of the story.
Oh, okay. That would be cool.
Yeah. And then we see him. Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah. Which I love that he, being a reporter, is so infatuated. Well, I wouldn't say I love it, but I do find it interesting that he's so infatuated with Walter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because, like, with their first interaction, he knows, like, well, you can't bullshit a bullshitter, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's intrigued by him because he just senses that he's, like, not being genuine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, he even tells him, like, you can drop all that shit now. I know you're acting. Because him and the owner of the club are acting like they're going to sue one another to you know, drum up business, and he's like, dude, you can drop that, it's fine, like, yeah. I know you're pretending
now. Here's something I find interesting about stuff like this. So
okay,
you had said at the end, you had mentioned about the little blurbs at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he still remained emphatic that he was the original painters. Okay. Right. Like he was the one who painted all those. He was still adamant. That was me. I promise. Like, what? Now, obviously, no, he's probably just a narcissist and he doesn't want to admit that he failed and that he's a liar and that he doesn't know what he's doing.
Mm.
But what if he did? You know, I'm not saying he did. I'm saying let's play a game. I'm saying,
okay,
this is an interesting, well, it's an interesting way to think about biopics like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, what if he did paint those paintings, right? And then we're getting this completely fabricated story about his wife painting these paintings. And then it becomes this uplifting story about, you know, this woman who, you know, was having to lie all these years and stuff. It's, I don't know. I think about that sometimes when someone is triumphant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other person is adamant that they were the actual ones who did it. And I promise. Right. Again,
I feel like there was,
I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying that he did paint any of those paintings. That's probably, it's more likely that she painted them. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, I guess, because I find it so hard to, like, stick with my lies. Like, if I were to be caught, I'm caught and that's it, you know?
Yeah, no, I get that. And I feel like there was another biopic I saw recently that of a similar situation of someone lying. And the liar obviously is caught and found out, but they are so adamant. Like, no, I was not lying, but I can't.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
Remember.
If I wouldn't have thought about it if at the end he was like, he still insisted he painted those paintings.
I think you're right. Well, I think you're right. I think he is a narcissist. And I think that I think Walter realized, like, once this all comes out, people are going to know that I'm I'm not as good as I say I am. And I think he was trying to hold on to some sort of fame.
Sure.
Maybe, you know,
I mean, that makes perfect sense. You know, but what if, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting, you know, if but unlike you, I don't think about those kinds of things. So, okay. I mean, it is an interesting what if, but I mean, I also know that we were given probably, you know, 60% of the real facts mm-hmm. in the movie. So,
yeah, I mean, she proved it in court that she could paint the painting. I understand. Okay. Again, it's the daughter is real and she painted the painting. They understand. Okay. Watch it again, the first 10 minutes, and then tell me if you think that daughter's there.
Well, no. I completely see where you're coming from, because, you know, she's framed not only behind Margaret, but like Margaret's here in the foreground and Jane is back here
uh-huh.
diagonal from her in the background.
Yeah.
So,
and not, no one was really interacting with her. And I was like, okay, well then there you go. You know?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong, but you are wrong.
Actively wrong.
But I didn't have that thought that she wasn't real.
Maybe I was just wanting there to be more twists, I guess, you know, maybe that was,
yeah,
I was wanting more, you know what it was? I was wanting more, more background into why she paints these paintings, I guess. Because if I was like, yeah. Oh, her daughter had died and she's just recreating these paintings to bring her daughter back, I get that. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry. Not that I need a reason why she paints the paintings. I just thought it would have been interesting, I guess.
Yeah. I will say that they didn't touch on a whole lot of why Margaret specifically paints these types of paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Which I agree. I don't need it. Like, yeah. You don't have to tell me. But I did want a little bit of just something, you know.
Well, you know, it's like people wanted, you know, a reason for Walter when he was in those interviews. You know what I mean? It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was obviously fabricated for him. But I'm wondering if a little bit of that, and it probably is now that I'm thinking about it, a little bit of that is probably her, right? Because she's helping him out. She's giving him her reasons and her feelings about the paintings and why she paints the paintings. And you know, he obviously made up a story to go with it, but, you know, perhaps there was some truth to that when she was helping Walter fabricate a story for the paintings.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she gave him enough to maybe he could, you know, snake oil salesman twist it
uh-huh.
and make it a little bit more charismatic. But yeah, my biggest question is, and this is kind of like the same question I had after Ashley and I left Oppenheimer, which is, why did she stick with him for so long?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I know she says during the court, you know, the hearing, the lawsuit, which is that she felt like if she did leave, she wasn't going to be able to provide for her and her daughter. But, you know, then we see them a year later in Hawaii and they're doing fine.
Well, so, you know, and what she thinks is going to, what she, her worst case scenario is, you know, it's never going to be what's actually going to happen. So I think at that point she was just like, whatever, I don't care. And, you know, there's, let's just do it and see what happens. Right.
Right.
And obviously they're fine, but you know, obviously at that point in time, her worst case scenario is not enough to risk, right? It's too mm-hmm. bad. She doesn't even want to think about it. And then, you know, it's also like, if I spill the beans about me being the painter, right.
Mm-hmm.
Then no one is, and they say it a few times in the movie that no one's going to buy art from a woman. Right.
Right.
Except for whomever they said. Was Georgia O'Keeffe? That was that? That was.
Oh, yeah, because it was during when we meet his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're talking to Danny Houston, and they're like, yeah, no one takes women's art seriously. And then she goes, well, what about Georgia O'Keeffe?
Right. And so she's afraid of that, right? Because if she's found out, then they lose what they have, and then they won't be able to get it back, because then, you know, it's, you know, just paintings from a woman, and no one wants those in 1958, you know? So there's that. So that's why she stays, you know. And then the longer it goes, the more she feels that she can't. She definitely now escape. Can't. Well, she definitely can't tell anybody now. So the longer they keep this up, the, you know, the deeper they get into it, then it's just like we're too into it now, right? And they're becoming successful, which is another thing, right? If they weren't being successful, who cares? Let's go, right? But wildly successful. So she's actually getting to paint and it becomes successful. The only thing she doesn't have is credit.
Right.
And probably authority over what she does with the money.
You know for sure Walter was probably keeping a bigger piece of that pie.
Sure.
All to himself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, that was the only kind of like, not qualm I had. It's just like that kind of question is like why she would stay. But again, you know, I understand she probably felt like she probably felt like she couldn't leave. And yeah, especially with them, how deep they were in the lie. Especially because, you know, he kind of threatened her with fraud. Like, you know, we're committing fraud here, which I don't think that's illegal just to say like, oh, hey, yeah, I painted these paintings. Let me sell it to you.
It depends.
I don't know. Yeah.
It depends. But, I mean, like legal documents, stuff like that, probably.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know. Seemed like a good enough reason for me that she'd stay. Until she didn't.
Right. Well, until, you know, he tries to light them on fire.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I saw the paint there. I go, they're going to explode.
Yeah. The turpentine.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess he forgot that she has like a second door into her studio. So
yeah.
I did want to mention this. Speaking of her studio, I love how when Kristen Ritter's looking at it and he's all, you know, trying to play up the act, like, you know, I don't like anyone in here. And then he just paints like a couple of lines. Like, yeah, you see, I'm painting. You
know? I did think that was very funny.
But yeah, man, you know, I really enjoy the movie, you know, and this is a good segue into kind of how we wrapped up your Fritz Lang, you know, last week with The Big Heat. I really liked the movie. It definitely felt like more of a mature movie for Tim Burton, especially in the chronological order that we did his films this season. Mm-hmm. This definitely felt like the most mature. I mean, not saying that like Batman, for instance, wasn't a mature film, but like in terms of tone, in terms of directing the actors and the movie itself, definitely felt very mature, less catering to the emo crowd that he has been associated with by this point in his career.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you mean is it's a little bit more for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more for general audiences, right? It's less for Tim Burton fans. This is for everybody, right?
Right. Yeah. As we're, you know, the week before last, Sweeney Todd definitely was for, like, if you're a Tim Burton fan, you're going to love it.
Yeah. And Sondheim.
Yeah, that's true too. But yeah, that's kind of what I mean, is that it's he wasn't, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, But to me, it seemed like he was like, you know, I'm not going to make this movie just for the people who like to come see my movies. I want everyone to know this story and to appreciate this artist's work.
Well, and then again, you know, he is telling a story the way it needs to be told, right? So he's not, even if he wanted to, it wouldn't have made any sense, right? To tell the story in a gray world with pops of red, who, you know what I mean? Like, it's like not this story, not for this.
I would say, because I just remember this, I would say the only Tim Burton-ism that we got in the film is when Margaret finally decides to leave Walter and he puts his eye through the keyhole.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
that was like, okay, there it is. There's our Tim Burton-ism.
That I like.
Yeah.
This one, it's an odd choice for him to direct in the first place. I think it's weird. That this is one of his, but it wasn't bad. I liked it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, so did I. I'm definitely glad I finally saw it. Of the movies we did this season, I would rank it, you know, pretty high up there. I would say in terms of rewatchability, I would definitely rewatch this one first than Mars Attacks.
We are different.
I mean, not saying that I wouldn't rewatch Mars Attacks, but if someone literally came to me and said, like, you can only rewatch one of these movies, it would be Big Eyes.
No, we are different.
But, you know, just like with Fritz Lang, you know, we saw his progression as sort of the, you know, starting with, you know, our Batman double feature of this sort of, essentially, he was taking a very much of a, I'm the loner director. I make films for loners, for outcasts, to this director who, you know, is making films on family and drama. And I think it's because I believe by this point he and Helena had a child together. I could be wrong. Hang on.
Okay.
Everyone calm down.
Can't
stop.
I'm
yelling.
I'm too amped up. You've set the bar too high and I can't, so much suspense.
I mean, he does have two kids.
Riveting.
Both of them are from Helena. One his son was born in 2003 and their daughter was born in 2007. So yeah, so by this point, yeah, he's you know, 2014, he's a big dad, so you know, he's a big dad. He wants to probably make something that not necessarily are quote unquote for kids, but tells more of a family oriented story.
I don't know if I would take that as a reasoning. I don't know. Maybe he just, okay, you know, again, resonates with the paintings. It is a fascinating story, right? Just bar none, it is fascinating because, what on earth? You know what I mean? Like, what a crazy, you know, set of circumstances that these people have put themselves in, right?
Right.
And so, like, if you love art, if you love this kind of art, which I'm sure he does, and it comes with a cool backstory, forget it. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Fit, and that in and of itself is also interesting.
Yeah.
That is a
film. And, you know, he assembled this, you know, awesome cast with great chemistry. I thought Christoph and Amy were fantastic on screen together.
Yes.
And I think that's something that has always remained consistent in all his films, especially the ones we've done this season, is he knows how to assemble a cast, especially with Mars Attacks, considering he got anyone and everyone under the sun to be in that movie.
Best one of the season. Is that what we're saying? Mars Attacks, best of the season. All right. It's above M.
I mean, he got Michael J. Fox to be in it, and this is right before he decided to stop, you know, retired from film acting and just stuck to TV acting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It might be now.
Oh, man. We did it.
Hey, look at us.
Jesus.
Well, I would take that as the wrap up.
Yeah.
So Jeremy, yes. You know, next week we have to get ready for our end of season series.
Yeah.
And once again, this time it is your turn.
My turn.
So what are we going to be doing? Okay. Even though I already know.
I know you already know. And we may have even mentioned it on this the season. I don't remember. But
I don't think we have.
So a few years ago, for my turn of the end of season series, I did
– Season two.
Season two. I pitched From Stage to Screen, and we did play adaptations. Mm-hmm. We did four of them. Play adaptations in season two, and we're going to do it again. So we are doing From Stage to Screen, act two. All right.
I see what you did there.
Thanks. And so four more. I love films based on plays.
Well, man, you know I've told you, and I know I've said it on the podcast since we did that, Sunset Limited was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I will never not talk about that movie. Like, I told everyone about the movie. I was like, go watch The Sunset Limited.
Yeah.
And when you gave me the list for this one, of course, the final one, I'm assuming you're saving that one. I want it to be a surprise for everyone.
We're going in chronological order for this as well. So, I mean, it just happens to be the last one.
So that one will be the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm especially excited to talk about that last one.
Yeah.
But, you know, this gives me another chance to see films that were based on plays, you know, like, Bug, for instance.
Yeah.
Bug was a good one. Phenomenal. Yeah. And had you never told me it was based on a play, I would have been like, cool. Like,
yeah.
Like, I like that movie was so fantastic that you don't need to know that it was once a play. So I'm the ones you told me for this one, I'm excited for. Mm-hmm. I've only seen one of them. So I guess we're going to learn if these three are going to blow my mind.
Sure.
Like the other four.
Let's hope so. I mean, I set the bar way too high the first time, because the first time was 12 Angry Men, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Bug, and The Sunset Limited. I mean, those are tremendous, right? But this time.
Yeah. There's 12 Angry Men, right?
It's so good.
Hang on. Right there.
If you don't have the Criterion and you want it, great. But you can also get the Kino Lorber 4K edition, which is also so we're kicking off the end of season series, Stage to Screen. Not only is this based on a play, but it's also based on a book. So the book is by Ken Casey. The play is by Dale Wasserman. And the movie, of course, is Milos Forman. Guys, we're doing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest next week. So
if I'm being 100% honest, I'm really excited to see this. I've always wanted to see it. It's always interested me because, you know, once again, we're back with our boy Jack Nicholson.
Yep.
Danny DeVito, Christopher Lloyd, mm-hmm. Brad. Oh, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He went on to become the voice of Chucky.
Mm-hmm. He's also in Deadwood. So shout out to.
Oh yeah,
I love Deadwood.
He's in Lord of the Rings. He's Grima. Yeah.
Yes.
But you know, I've always wanted to see it because I distinctly remember my grandparents, my mom's parents, having this DVD anniversary edition of it that had like all this like really cool
had playing cards
stuff in it. It didn't have playing cards. Oh. It was just like this really nice box mm-hmm. that I really liked, and I just never got around to seeing it. Mm-hmm. Cause I didn't, you know, of course this is before I really understood film. And then like I watched a sort of like an analysis of it and I was like, okay, that still interests me. And I just never got around to it.
Now I'm in a love hate relationship with Ryan Murphy. So I have not seen Nurse Ratched. I don't want to. So, but those of you who are interested and have seen it, let me know. But if it's any good,
that's supposed to be, it's supposed to be a prequel.
Yeah. To One Flew Over. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't care how good Sarah Paulson is. Who fucking cares? Don't ruin it.
Well, look, you know? I'm going to be honest, bro. Hang on, sidebar, everyone. All right. Ryan Murphy has run out of ideas for American Horror Story. Like the next season, Delicate, Ashley, this is the first season that Ashley has ever told me because she loves American Horror Story. She's like, I will not be watching that season.
Really?
Mainly because the subject matter is too much for her.
Yeah, oh, I don't
even know. But for me, like the last few seasons, I haven't really cared about. But for me, he's basing this on a book. And I'm like, so you mean to tell me this is his first season that he is not? It's not original, like that, because that's how many ideas he's ran out of.
Interesting. Based on a book.
Because he's stretched himself too thin with that stupid fucking spinoff, American Horror Stories, and doing a whole season's worth of shit in one episode. Like, dude, Ryan Murphy, you just need to stop. Just reboot Glee already. But to your point, I haven't seen Ratched either, mainly because since I haven't seen One Flew Over,
yeah,
I was like, should I even watch this? Even though, yes, I love Sarah Paulson. I think she's phenomenal.
If those of you who are listening aren't excited yet about One Flew Over, I mean, you should be because it's wonderful and it's amazing and everything's great. It's one of the first films, or one of the only films, there's only a few, that in the Academy Awards won the Big Five. So that's actor, actress, screenplay, director, picture.
Best picture, yeah.
Yeah. 1975.
The last one to do that, at least as far as I know, was, it's behind my head, I'm not going to get it, was Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Big Five. I don't want to even say, because I don't know. But there have been others than those two, but I don't remember.
Well, so. Well,
I think
everything's the most recent.
Yeah, and I think Return of the King either did it also or got close.
I think it got close. I know it got Best Picture
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest next week. Very, very excited. And hopefully this will go well. I mean, get as excited as you want. About these stage to screen. I am excited. I love film adaptations of plays. I love how creative they can get with the subject matter, because you're having to add a little extra, but also know what to keep sort of subdued and grounded, right? Because you don't want to go too over the top. That's why I think Bug is so good, because, or even just like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I mean, you might as well be watching a stage play, right? But it's so good that, you know, they add just enough, but they keep everything mm-hmm. else as subdued as they can. I don't know. It's an art. I don't know how they do it.
I'm super excited, man. You know, the only problem is, and I'll probably say it again when this series wraps up, is you set these bars too high, and then when it's my turn to pick an end of season series, sometimes I'm worried they don't pan out as well. I think the best end of season series I picked was the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy.
That was a good one. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
highest rated episode we have. Good job.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, we hoped you enjoyed our episode on Big Eyes, and we will see you next week for our end of season series, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.